roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goat. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Racing Sportsbook, we're listening to another episode of the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I am your host, Gorgeous George, and with me as always is the devious and dastardly Goes, Ari's co-host. What's up, Goes, on a Sunday, January 26th?
A little bit of a somber Sunday.
Yes.
Kind of a sad day for a lot of people, but mostly Laker fans and people from California.
Yeah, I would almost say whether you are a Lakers fan or an Angelino, you emphasized especially, so yeah. The whole world is sad because of the passing of Kobe Bryant this earlier today, along with his daughter Gigi, and seven other passengers. So we're going to obviously dedicate this show to them, and I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to share our thoughts on what Kobe meant to us, you know, two dudes that grew up in Orange County, about 45 minutes south of LA, for sure, diehard Lakers fans. This guy transcended the whole, you know, him being a basketball player. I mean, he was just like a Los Angeles icon for many. And he's going to be sorely missed, that's for sure. But, yeah, very somber mood. And, of course, going back to last night, we had two events that we plan on recapping. UFC on ESPN Plus 24 out in Raleigh, North Carolina, headlined by Curtis Blaydes and Junior Dos Santos. We'll also talk about Bellator 238, Bud versus Cyborg, at the old stomping grounds of the Lakers, the Forum in Inglewood, California, where, guess what, Kobe Bryant, I think, started his career there. Mm-hmm. Kobe Bryant basically played from 1996 to 2016, and I know Staples Center came around the time of either like 99 or 2000s, but I know he had a season or two in the Forum. So, all right, folks, buckle up. Either way, we are delivering another MMA Junkie Radio episode. Lots to talk about.
In 2008, a former D1 football star pulled off a robbery so daring and so strange that it went viral worldwide. It was a perfect crime story. There was just one problem. It wasn't the real story of what happened. The Sneak is a new, serialized true crime podcast from For the Win and USA Today Sports. You can subscribe now on Apple Podcasts or get it anywhere you get podcasts on Tuesday, January 14th.
All right, guys. So last night we had a couple of events. We had UFC on ESPN Plus 24 and Bellator 238. Now, usually we're kind of putting Bellator off to the side, almost like the JV game in high school, and then obviously the UFC being the varsity offering. However, this one was a little different. I really enjoyed Bellator. I'm glad they didn't really overlap much, and I was able to catch some key fights in both promotions. So we're going to give almost equal time. You know, the UFC is deeper, obviously, so maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that, but We'll start off with the UFC. Curtis Blaydes defeated Junior Dos Santos in the main event. It was round two, 2 minutes and 6 seconds in. TKO goes, not a ground and pound, not a submission or anything, because, you know, this was kind of tabbed a little bit grappler versus striker. And that, you know, we say it because each fighter has their background, but as Curtis proved, I mean, you have to have the full arsenal of weapons when you're in the major leagues.
Yeah, I think the broadcasters kept kind of emphasizing that he's playing Junior's game, he's playing Junior's game. But really, when you go back and you watch it, like, he attempted about four takedowns in the first round. And some of them, you could say, he got in pretty deep and just wasn't able to take Junior down.
Junior stifled him. It's like he was winning a little bit of the mental game there.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm okay with Curtis going to the striking. I thought when he was doing it, he was doing well, and I get that that's Junior's world, but I mean, you have to be able to do everything at that point. And it's not like he came out and that's all he wanted to do. He tried to do what he's best at, and he just couldn't get it to work in the beginning. So I thought it was a great performance for Curtis, but I also didn't think Junior looked too bad. It's just what happens in these situations is you look at the guy and you go, can Junior Dos Santos still deliver good, interesting fights? Probably. But can he string together whatever it takes to get a title? Probably not.
Yeah, the heavyweight division it's deep, not compared to lightweight, obviously, or welterweight. It's just deep compared to the way the UFC heavyweight division has been over the years. There's really, really a lot of contenders. For one, we have a clear matchup for the title that's coming up because Stipe Miocic has been cleared he had a hand injury and he's cleared to train and obviously take a fight. So I expect that booking soon with Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier. And then you got Francis Ngannou against Jair Rozenstruik. Ngannou was a clear number one to those other two. It's just that he got tired of waiting around. So now he's got the surging Rozenstruik in front of him. Of course, Curtis Blaydes saying, hey, look, I should be in that talk. But let's be real. Blaydes needs Rozenstruik to beat Ngannou because Blaydes is behind Ngannou because he's lost twice to Ngannou.
Yeah.
Now, that said, I didn't like Junior, I'm sure, studied this guy. Far be it for me to tell him this is what you should have done because I'm the Monday quarterback or the Sunday night quarterback. But the announcers noted it. That left hand was a little bit low. You know what I mean? It looked like what the guys were saying, on the announcing crew was he was going to use that to anticipate the shot, you know, because it'd be really, really important for him to get an underhook. And then he seemed like he was telegraphing an uppercut. Look, it worked for a while with Junior Dos Santos because he was able to fight off some takedowns. But in the end, he just got cracked with a right hand that, look like, hey, look, there's a job. Boom. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like some methodical sequence or anything like that. And then once he hit him.
Kind of see it coming, huh?
He lit him up, yeah. I mean, Blaydes looked really, really good. So all credit to Curtis Blaydes. I don't think Dos Santos' fall is going to be too, you know, it's not going to be this huge fall where all of a sudden, you know, he's like on some prelim show or anything like that. But it's a costly one. You know, he's getting up there in age. And you just can't lose too many of these because, like I say, there's fighters that are surging like Rozenstruik. There's fighters that are cemented like Ngannou. There's fighters that are wild cards like Jon Jones. At any moment, if he goes, I'd like to move up, or if Brock Lesnar says, I'd like to fight, you know, forget the rest of the guys. So this one's a little bit costly for Junior Santos. The good thing is he didn't get eviscerated, you know, and just put to sleep completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw a little bit of that on Twitter, just people saying, should Junior retire now? What's the deal with this guy? And I get why people go that route, because I think a lot of people look at it as, if you can't contend for a title, then what are you doing in this dangerous sport, right? Mm-hmm. So I kind of get that, but the thing is, with Junior Dos Santos, when you look at his record, there's not a whole lot of KOs that he's suffered, but a lot of the damage, especially in the Cain Velasquez fights, I could almost say are maybe worse when you look at it at the end of his career, right, than the actual knockouts.
Yeah, I think the fans are quick to usher the door. And hell, I may have done it a few weeks ago when I was asking you and John and others that we did our different shows with about Cerrone. But, you know, Cerrone's got 50-some fights and he's lost three in a row. I guess it's just something that's going to come up from time to time. But as far as Dos Santos is concerned, I don't think he's ready to retire, per se. He's 35, which isn't really old as a heavyweight in mixed martial arts. He has lost two in a row, but two killers. I mean, Blaydes has only lost twice to Ngannou. And Ngannou is pretty much the future, you know. Prior to that, Junior Dos Santos beat Blagojevich, Ivanov, Tai Tuivasa, and Derek Lewis. And in two of those, Lewis and Tuivasa, he got the finish. So that's just the way it's going to go, in the heavyweight division. It's really, really hard to string together 10, 11, 12 wins in a row. I guess that's what makes Fedor so great from back in the day. But right now, it's too competitive. As far as Curtis Blaydes is concerned, he'll probably have to take another fight unless Rozenstruik beats Ngannou, and then maybe he has the number one contendership available to him. But look, I just finished saying Miocic has been cleared. So as of right now, they've already booked March, which is Yoel Romero and Israel Adesanya. April, which is Khabib versus Tony. So May is looking like Henry Cejudo versus Jose Aldo. So unless they send those heavyweights to accompany Triple C and or Double C now, and Aldo, because that fight card is going to be in Sao Paulo, Brazil, you might be looking at June.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's Blaydes going to do? Wait till June just to see the result. Hope there's no injuries in camps or anything. Hope it's not a classic, or a draw. I mean, DC is saying it's going to be his last fight, but you never know. He was also supposed to retire last March when he was turning 40, and that didn't happen. That's, you're playing with fire there a little bit, when you're forecasting that far ahead, especially in the UFC.
Yeah, and then it just depends on what you believe out there, right? I mean, you got Stipe Miocic playing a little bit of hardball, saying he doesn't want to fight DC in his next fight. He wants a fresh matchup.
And is that DC, what he said?
Yeah, he wants a fresh matchup. And so you had DC at the end of the event, kind of, they gave him about a minute to state his case. And he was saying, look, man, I gave it to him. He goes, I wanted a fresh matchup too, but out of respect for him, I gave him the matchup, so you should give me mine.
Well, DC did get Derek Lewis before it came back to Stipe, but he was going to get Derek and then Brock. I think Stipe didn't like that little song and dance, but I think that's just a trilogy that needs to be settled. You know? I can't say too much more about it. I'm arguably a DC mark, so no one's going to take me seriously. Michael Chiesa defeated Rafael Dos Anjos in the co-main event. 229-28 and a 30-27. Dude, Chiesa looked good.
He did. I mean, he was all over the place on there. And really, I mean, you go back and you look at RDA, like, he didn't look that bad. It's just Michael Chiesa was on point. He was one step ahead on everything. And some of them takedowns were nice. And not just getting the takedown, but actually working them, working the position and making sure that Rafael couldn't get back up. You know, it was pretty bad. I mean, even when, like, the body triangle at some points, like, he just was always one step ahead of the guy, and that is a tough out, man. That's one of the tougher guys.
Who, by the way, he's lost 4 of 5 to Dos Anjos. Mm-hmm. He went up to welterweight after losing to Tony Ferguson as his final lightweight fight that he had, and he beat Tarek Saffiedine, who I believe had a Strikeforce title at one point, Neil Magny, very, very tough welterweight for many years, and Robbie Lawler, former UFC welterweight champ. And everybody's like, great move, RDA, you can eat steak instead of salad, you know, and since then he's lost 4 or 5. Now, one of them was that interim title shot against Colby that started the downfall, and these have all been killers. Covington, Usman, Edwards, and I guess now Chiesa, you know. Now, Chiesa, he had an interesting post-fight with Daniel Cormier. He kept it short, simple, sweet. He just said, look, Colby Covington, I want to fight you in July. Boom, that's it. He walked away.
Mm-hmm.
And the crowd gave the old, ooh, you know what I mean? And I even said it to myself, like, oh, shit, look at this guy. You know what I mean? Others were saying he could have maybe added to it. I think Bisping said that, and they're probably right. But I looked, because I obviously, you know, am immersed a little bit in the rankings game. He still needs to slow down a little bit. He's beaten Diego Sanchez, Carlos Condit, respectable welterweights, but past their prime. And now RDA, there's a lot of guys out there like Ponza, Nibio, Edwards, Luque, you know what I mean? Even old Damian Maya's coming off a win. He's got to work his way up. Wonder Boy, you know, he's got to work his way up, man. I don't know if he's going to get Covington. I applaud him for throwing it out there. And he says he's usually pretty lucky when it comes to that because he usually gets what he wants. But, you know, I don't know. I think he might be jumping the gun a little bit. We'll see.
Well, Covington's one of the few names in the UFC that when you call him out, you don't necessarily, if you can generate enough heat, I don't know that rankings and all that plays anything in it. He's that one guy that you can just generate heat with right away. However, Chiesa kind of did it almost in a respectful way. He just said, that's what I want. That's it. Like, you didn't say because I hate him or I disagree with anything he says.
I
mean, if
they give it to him, I'll watch it for sure. It might be a bit too soon. I had to actually pull up the rankings and see Wait, hold on a sec. I mean, you still got, I always butcher his name, the guy that I call Lee Jingling. That guy, you know what I mean? There's a few others, man, that are still there. And I think he's going to get another matchup, but I think he might get Covington at some point. Alex Perez defeated Jordan Espinoza. Angela Hill defeated Hannah Cyphers. Jamahal Hill defeated Darko Stosic. So that was your main card. On the undercard, Bevan Lewis defeated Daquan Tansen. Arnold Allen, I think like 6-0, 7-0 in the UFC, defeated Nick Lentz. Justine Kish defeated Lucy Pudilova. Montel Jackson defeated Felipe Calares. Sarah McMahon just had a baby. She defeated Lena Landsberg in a return bout. Brett Johns, very emotional after his win over Tony Gravely. Herbert Burns defeated Nate Landwehr. That was UFC in Raleigh, North Carolina. 14,533 in attendance. The gate was 1.3 million and some change. The bonuses, they went to Brett Johns and Tony Gravely for fight of the night, performance of the night, Alex Perez and Herbert Burns. I guess there was no, well, you got to give it to Curtis Blaydes. You got to give it to Curtis Blaydes the same way last week. McGregor just had to get his. You know, whatever. That was last week. This is this week, and that's the UFC in North Carolina. Any final thoughts on that?
It was a decent card.
Okay. All right. Bud versus Cyborg over at Bellator 238. Julia Budd was putting up her women's featherweight title versus Chris Cyborg, and she lost in round four, 1 minute and 14 seconds in. Chris Cyborg claims the featherweight title via TKO, mostly punches. Look, it was a fun fight. I really enjoyed it. I thought Bud for a while was hanging in there. But you could see Chris was just superior. So it was going to be Bud. You know, her clinch game, maybe a little bit of wrestling, was just going to have to get the job done against Chris, who was willing to ground and pound. She was willing to strike. She was willing to maybe go for a submission. Who knows? It just seemed like she had more tools at her disposal. And finally, she put it all together, and it was a really nice win.
It reminded me of, to me, it looked like somebody that was swinging with a golf club and the other person swinging with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
And you felt like, okay, if they hit you enough with the golf club, yeah, they can hurt you. But every one of these baseball bat swings just looks like at any second they're ready to put your lights out.
Yeah.
And Chris was just hitting her with everything, different angles, kicks, punches. Man, that was a savage performance.
It sure was. And now Chris can boast that she's held a UFC title, a Strikeforce title, a Bellator title, and an Invicta title. Very, very impressive. So congratulations to Chris Cyborg. Now, that said, boy, I mean, she could, that would almost cement GOAT status right there, with the exception of there's a young lady named Amanda Nunes who's still the UFC featherweight champion, who viciously knocked out Chris Cyborg. And yes, she's got more losses than Chris Cyborg and not as many belts, you know, as Chris Cyborg has across different promotions. So I think Chris either just needs the crossroads with Amanda sometime down the road, or just live with the fact that that one fight kind of hurt her actual GOAT status. You know what I mean?
You know, it's very rare when you look at what people talk about, like the Mount Rushmore. You have a person on there that almost like when the Brady Bunch episodes are done, you just kind of look up, look down, look all around, and she has wins over the other people
kinda
on the Mount Rushmore.
She's Alice in the middle, right?
Yeah. So when do you ever have that scenario? Like, you know, today we were talking about Kobe Bryant, right? Mm-hmm. And some of the names that were thrown out there, he didn't get to play with all of them. No, he got to play a little bit with some of them, but so when do you ever get to see what actually happens with those people? And you have the case here with the women's Mount Rushmore, where she would turn around and look at just about everybody and say, yeah, I beat them all. Amanda Nunes beat them all. So it's really, really hard to do that. I don't know that her resume can, even if there was another organization that we were forgetting that she won a belt over there, at the end of the day, there's still a girl that goes, yeah, but I beat you.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing she could do is beat someone like Kat Zingano would have to string some fights together. If Chris beat her, then Chris, Kat, and Amanda would be in a what I call a round robin, where one of them beat each other. But, man, it's still tough. But look, I don't think Chris is too worried about it. I mean, she was always known as the GOAT until that one loss. And right now, more than anything, she just looks happy over at Bellator. She actually stressed that she wasn't happy in the UFC. She was happy at Bellator. So all I can say is, hey, good for her. I tip my hat. And that's it. Darian Caldwell defeated Adam Borks. This was a featherweight Grand Prix quarterfinal. It was also the co-main event. And he kind of made quick work of him, honestly. Mm-hmm. Submitted a rear naked choke. Now he moves on to fight AJ McKee. They had a nice little face-off. And we're halfway towards having our semifinals for that Bellator featherweight Grand Prix, which ends with $1 million going to the winner. And, of course, along the way, Patricio Frady, he is defending as he competes. So there's still two more quarterfinal matchups before we get to the semifinals. And if you're curious, it is Patricio Frady versus Pedro Carvalho. This fight's going to take place at Bellator 241 on March 13th. So we're still 6 weeks away there. And Emmanuel Sanchez fights Daniel Weichel in the other one. Same card, it looks like. So at least we're starting to close in.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I really enjoyed about this Bellator card, and it was the pacing of it, because I was doing some things in between fights, and it left me just enough time where things like the face-off or even the MVP program that they talked about, you didn't necessarily have to be staring at the TV, but you could just kind of hear it mm-hmm. and do things, and then another fight would come on, and everything just kind of had like a little bit, the pace was interesting because they would revisit something else. So they would move on to MVP and now you're kind of into that. And then they would move on to the Grand Prix and they talk about that. And then you have that. And next thing you know, there's another fight going on. Like, I don't know. I think I might've had more fun watching the Bellator card than the UFC card.
Yeah. And just so everybody knows, MVP, merging vets and players, Bellator had, it was like a tribute towards merging vets and players, which is basically an organization that helps former military personnel, that's what they mean by vets, and players, athletes from the combat sports world, which includes football, hockey, and combat sports, that have suffered any form of traumatic brain injury or CTE, as they call it. And basically, it's a place, there are gyms where people that have had, you know, those different forms of traumatic brain injuries can get together and almost like work out and also form a group, you know, with others, because I think a lot of people come back and they have this stigma that they're not right, something's wrong, you know, and this group is offering an opportunity to work out, because what studies have shown is that an MMA workout is really, really good for those that suffer PTSD, you know, coming over from the military world. You get a chance to like break a sweat and punch something and be part of like a brotherhood or sisterhood. And so merging vets and players is something that we've seen here in Las Vegas, because it's one of their chapters is in Las Vegas at Extreme Couture. They have one in LA, and I believe Randy, from the times he's been on the show, if I recall, either Chicago and New York, I believe were two other branches.
Think New Atlanta, York, maybe. Right?
Yeah. So check into that if you've served our country and you've always wanted to be a part of something like this. I'm telling you, the parking lot is full on Fridays in Las Vegas, and a lot of people have really benefited from MVP. Now, like Goz was saying, just the names alone, Goz, like I just went through the main card and said Alex Perez defeated Jordan Espinoza, Angela Hill defeated, you know what I mean? And when I said that, I blasted through it. I mean, there really wasn't much coming out of that. But over here, you had Juan Archuleta against Henry Corrales. Now, that fight didn't deliver like it should have, but those guys have put in some work, so it caused us to watch it. You know what I mean? Because those are two decent names. Sergio Pettis.
That's what we've been asking for from Bellator.
Exactly.
Those type of fights.
Exactly. Sergio Pettis came over from the UFC. He looked amazing as he dispatched of Alfred Kazakhanian. Ramon Daniels defeated Jason King. Like I said, it was just a little bit of everything. And even on the undercard, they had some names there. That Brendan Bender guy, remember I told you the real arrogant guy that came into the studio? He suffered a loss, but I knew he was a SoCal guy. I always cheer for the SoCal guys. Aaron Pico got a win. That AJ Agazarm, who's a grappling wizard, he was on the card. Curtis Millender, folks, was on the undercard. Even Chris Avila, who's, I think, Nate Diaz's protege, who hasn't gone too well for him, by the way, he was on the undercard. So this was a nice card for Bellator.
Yeah, you know what was kind of cool, too, was looking into the stands and seeing, like, some celebrities, some fighters from other organizations. Like, it just seemed like it was a big deal that night.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. That's why it was fun to see an East Coast version and then the West Coast version. It just worked out kind of there with the times, and you know, that was that. Okay. As far as news, look, I guess there's a bunch of news, and maybe we can tackle that a little bit more on Thursday, but I do want to talk a little bit about Kobe Bryant. But before we get to that, how about what's going on here with Stephen A. Smith, Joe Rogan, and a little bit of Conor McGregor, who's kind of stuck his nose there at the end. Of course, at the end of UFC 246, Stephen A. Smith had some comments that weren't taken well by, I would say, some MMA media, some MMA fans, specifically Joe Rogan, who at the time just said, hey, look, I respectfully disagree. I saw what you saw, but in a different way. Stephen A. Smith kind of basically came after Cerrone, right? Goes, you were saying boring, I believe, was what were the two terms?
He said
I thought it was like disgusting, but
he quit.
Yeah, he quit. That's right.
I think he said it was atrocious, right?
Yeah.
And I have it here. Hold on, let me look it up real quick.
Yeah, I know quitter was one of them.
That he looked like he quit and that it was atrocious. I think those are the comments that everybody had problems with.
Right. So then Rogan, when he did his JRE, so Joe Rogan Experience, but the MMA version, he had a chance to kind of like expand on it a little bit. And he kind of went in a little bit on Stephen A. Smith, almost saying like maybe he shouldn't be there. Like maybe someone like DC or someone else that can speak on what they just saw should be there. And look, all I can say is when I unpack all of this, I'll tell you what. I went back and looked at UFC 246. Rogan said a few things, especially when he's talking about those shoulder strikes from McGregor to Cowboy, where he was even questioning why Cowboy didn't do anything about him. There was four in a row that came. What I don't think Rogan knew was that Cowboy was concussed from the minute Connor threw his left hand and missed, but his thigh and knee collided with the side of Cerrone's head. That basically is what gave him the mouse that you saw on the bottom of his left eye. The shoulder strikes gave him the broken nose. Cerrone said he thought they were elbows, but he was concussed. Of course, afterwards, he took a kick to the head and a bunch of follow-up strikes. I think the problem was, to the amateur eye of Stephen A. Smith, who hasn't seen as many fights, he probably worded it wrong. I mean, it was basically a one-sided matchup. I think that's a term you said the other day, that if he had said something like that, we all would have been okay. But Cerrone didn't even have time to quit. Those first 3 seconds, he got that knee and that head. I don't even think, I just think he was on another planet, you know? He was just basically working off the experience of, you know, being hurt and having his hands up, and hopefully he can catch a single and clear the cobwebs. But he never did that because McGregor blitzed him. I didn't catch that until I've seen the fight a few times, you know what I mean? And I had the benefit of that. Rogan's, he's got the best seat in the house. He didn't catch that. But even Rogan felt like, you know, Cerrone didn't answer those strikes. You know, I bet you now he's had a chance to see it and see that Cerrone never even had that chance. Therefore, I think the quitter part, you can throw that one out the window. He didn't quit.
Mm-hmm.
He just got blitzed from the very beginning. But what the reason I state what Rogan said is because if anybody's listening, they might think, even Rogan thinks that's like that Cerrone kind of shit the bed, that he had no answer for the strikes. It's not that he didn't have the answer. He was concussed and he didn't even know what was happening at that time. So it's not like he felt it and goes and said, man, I sure hope I don't get hit with another one. Oh my God, I just got hit with another one. I sure hope I don't get hit with, like, DC had no answer for body shots. You know, he could actually take some criticism, but Cerrone, this one was a little bit different. So I think in a way, Rogan actually was saying a similar stuff as what Stephen A. was feeling. The only problem is Stephen A. worded it differently. It was not atrocious or anything like that. He was just a fighter that was, you know, in La La Land.
He's an outsider looking in. So it's difficult for,
but he's entitled to his opinion.
MMA fans. Yeah, he is.
That's how he saw it. You know, that's.
But there's a difference between, like, if your mother criticizes the way you dress and then a stranger comes in and does it, one probably hurts a little bit more. One kind of raises an eyebrow a little differently because I don't know you, Stephen A. Smith. What are you doing in my world walking into my house telling me how I should dress for an occasion that you've never been to, right? Stephen A. Smith didn't really say that many crazy things. He just said them differently. His opinions are the same opinions of a lot of MMA fans. He just said it in a way that was a little disrespectful and shows that he probably doesn't understand the sport as much as he should if he's going to be in that role. But that being said, like you, I don't know that you want him to go away. You just want him to be better.
And that's what he was saying, was like, look at the numbers. But I don't think the numbers are important, because you could say something very controversial if you want to get numbers, and it doesn't mean you're right. You know, he was very respectful towards Joe Rogan. He over and over, he was respectful towards Cerrone, McGregor, and Joe Rogan. But he stood up for himself and says, I belong here. Look at the numbers. I was brought in for a reason. I may have just seen it differently. And obviously, you definitely know more than I do in this sport. But it doesn't mean that me as a reporter, I can't say what I feel.
Yeah.
The problem is he didn't understand that he was concussed from the very beginning. To him, he thought, wow, there's this big buildup. Here it is. Here's the big fight. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, it was over so fast. Yeah, to that amateur and untrained eye, he probably... it's terrible that he thought he quit.
Oh, even then it happened in the moment.
Yeah.
So he may not even seen the thigh part. He's probably thinking,
for sure he did.
What, a lot shoulder of strikes did that? You know,
right.
What are we doing here? What's going on? Like, how could you fall for it? He's probably thinking all that stuff.
And then he just sees a guy that's kind of like covering up, looking for a way out. Like a lot of people will say that they're looking for a way out. They just want, you know, they're done.
You have two guys with very, very strong personalities and two guys that I don't really think are known for coming out and going, you know what, I was wrong.
Was Rogan right? Should he just not be a part of the broadcast?
If he's going to perform that way, yeah. But I think he brings value to it, because the same thing, like, we just had the Grammys, right? How many people just want to be seen at the Grammys, right? Celebrities and all that. Because what does that mean? If you're there, it means it's an important event, right? Same thing with the UFC, a sport that's still kind of growing. You need those type of faces around to kind of validate it, to make it feel like it's on the same level of what we're all going to be talking about this week in a Super Bowl, right? You want to be at that level, and you need people like that covering the sport and talking about it.
And his
shtick is to give
that strong opinion. Because Kurt Menefee from Fox, when he hosted, he always kind of stayed in his lane.
Right.
And I would say maybe Stephen A. could stay in his lane a little bit until he learns more of the sport.
Even Gus Johnson a little bit.
He's going to come a little bit with his... with his over-the-top opinions like that and not recognize what happened, which a lot of people didn't recognize early on, and me too. I'm raising my hand. I was guilty. I didn't catch it the first time. Then that's tough. I just think it was bad circumstance all the way around. You know what I mean? As far as Stephen A. Smith, sounds like he wants to still have a chat with Joe Rogan, keeping it respectful and everything. Sounds like he wants to be a part of this. Sounds like he still wants to be a part of boxing. I know he's taking heat over on the boxing side too. But then... here comes old Conor McGregor, and he wants Stephen A. Smith to apologize. Now, Stephen A. Smith did a long video on Twitter, and we have the transcript there. I'm not going to read the whole thing, otherwise this will be a two-hour show. But it's there on MMA Junk if you want to see it. It was his rebuttal to Joe Rogan, and of course, we provide the links to the Joe Rogan MMA show if you want to check out thoroughly what he said. But basically, again, he just said something along the line of, had it been like a Daniel Cormier, I know he pointed that out, it would have been a completely different conversation, and it would have been better for the sport. Now, Conor McGregor sees what's happening, and he says, the call you discuss here is A+. So he's complimenting Stephen A. Smith. I didn't show enough. I'm not paid by the hour, though. Joe's comments, however, come from you saying the opposition fighter quit. Broken nose, orbital bone, say different. Fighting is vicious. Those who make the walk... deserve full respect. Apologize. I don't think he's going to get an apology from Stephen A. Smith. I'm sure Stephen A. Smith knows that fighters who make the walk do deserve respect. If the fight just doesn't go your way, I think everyone's free and clear to make their opinion on what they thought of the fight. You know, and that's that. One thing he points out though is, Stephen A. Smith was saying, by not seeing enough from Conor McGregor to see if he needs to go back in there with Habib, some of that was Cerrone's fault, and we still didn't see enough from McGregor. And by the way, Rogan saying it's just because McGregor was steamrolling him, but he did show enough to see versus Habib. So I think that's why McGregor was standing up for Rogan and himself.
I don't think that we saw enough from Conor McGregor. I mean, what we saw was great, mm-hmm. but I don't know that questions were really answered. It sucks because that's probably the best thing for Connor.
There was no ring rust, that's for sure.
Yeah, there was no ring rust. So, I mean, I kind of agree with both of them, really.
The power's there. He didn't answer questions as far as Khabib's wrestling skills.
Cardio. Can he stop that? You know, at 170, when you're packing on that muscle, could you sustain that over five rounds if you had to? Like, there are a lot of questions to be answered. I think if Stephen A. Smith is upset with what happened that night, I think what he needs to realize is his beef is not with the fighter, it's with the sport. Because that could very well happen in the next main event. That's mm-hmm. just how our sport works out. Sometimes it happens. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that it goes down that way, but it could happen.
I wonder what he thought of Masvidal Askren.
I know, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, that was the big news of the week. It's all on Junkie if you want to check it out. The tweets, the comments, the retorts, this, that, whatever, the apologies that they're looking for. But I think these are three grown men, and I think it'll all be swept under the rug. Let's talk a little bit. We'll finish up here with Kobe Bryant. Gozy came downstairs this morning and said, "Did you hear about Kobe Bryant? He's dead," or something like that. I think you were in shock. And of course, I'm looking at you like, okay, is this a what if? Why are you saying that? And right away, I can tell you, guys, my heart started beating. And my heart's only supposed to beat like that for family and friends when I hear of somebody, you know, passing away. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm sad if anybody I know or, you know, we just saw a tribute to Prince, the musician. Yeah, of course you get sad, but something about Kobe, like, that hit home. I was like, what? He's young, he's a Laker, he's kind of like mythical, you know what I mean? Even though he's retired, he looks so good, and you know, he's wealthy, and we've seen him a little bit in the MMA world, you know. I just couldn't believe when you told me that was true. Of course, I start scrambling, I see the TMZ report. Look, a life can be taken at any moment. This man was in a helicopter crashes are pretty unforgivable. And I knew that he took helicopters because I know the Kobe Bryant story. He used to do this a lot going from Orange County, where we're from, to L.A. You don't want to deal with 2 hours of traffic. And so he bought a helicopter, and he would take a helicopter ride that would last 20 minutes and get to the lake. He actually would stay at a hotel right across from Staples. He would check in, take a nap, and then I think there was tunnels that he could take. Or you get in a car and go straight to Staples. I remember reading a real cool article once. But as soon as you said it, and there was something about a helicopter, I knew it was true, and it was so sad, Goes. I've been gutted all day. Kobe Bryant was a guy that played for the Lakers for 20 years. We won 5 titles. We won a lot of games. We won a lot of playoff games. Even the years we didn't win playoff titles, we were just always in the hunt. This guy made our team relevant, and he kind of he brought back a little bit of the 80s, which the Lakers dominated with 5 titles. And then in the 90s, we had a couple early years in the 90s that were okay. And then remember the Van Exel, Eddie Jones era? Mm-hmm. You know, and then we get Shaq and Kobe. Like, the 90s were there, but then all of a sudden we three-peated. Then we won, you know, 2 titles later on with Gasol. And I'm telling you, man, it was special. I remember just the guy that watched a lot of games. And, you know, I mean, as a Laker fan, nobody could say shit to us. At least in my lifetime, I've seen 10 titles, you know, and I've actually seen 11, but one of them, I was really, really little, but I've seen 10, man. And, you know, between the Magic era and Kobe era, it was just one of the greatest things ever. It was really, really saddening, really heartbreaking. Him and his little daughter flying via helicopter along with 7 others to some basketball camp. I guess there was some fog problems, some fog issues, and they delayed, circled around LA for a little while, and then when they thought they had some visibility, they were headed basically over the 101 freeway as they headed the Thousand Oaks, but I guess they encountered more fog, tried to turn around, and then I still don't know all the details past that of why all of a sudden he went into, you know, the pilot went into the a mountainside. But I am gutted, Goes. The last thing I'll say is Kobe was these were years where I worked in the corporate world. I had 2 stints in the corporate world, but there was one where you just couldn't wait for 5 o'clock to come around so you could either go home or go to the bar for happy hour, mm-hmm. and just watch the Lakers, have some sauces, invite the girls over from, you know, from your, you know, the workplace, have some drinks from 5 to about 7:30. And then the Lakers tipped off. And then me and my buddies, by then we were buzzed. Hey, Lakers, to the over, you know, and then we'd live and die with the results. But most of the time we had some great results. I mean, like I say, it's just, he gave me a lot of memories, man. This one hurts.
Yeah. I mean, all day I've been watching highlights and stuff from his career. So he gave us a lot of memories. And I'm glad that, like, that you brought that up about the Van Exel and Eddie Jones and all that, because that was one of the things that he pointed to when he retired, was those years meant a lot to him just as much as the championship, because he felt like he went through hard times, but they did it the right way and they got through them. And just even like the way he went out in his last game was just like a storybook ending, you know, everything he did, and you see the energy in the crowd and the celebrities, like, it was dope, man. He's one of those few guys that, like, our biggest rival, the Boston Celtics, like, if something like that were to happen to Larry Bird, I would kind of feel crushed too, you know, like an Isaiah Thomas, even Jordan.
Because you love to hate him. You hate him, but you love to hate him.
But you respected him, you know, like if that next game at Staples Center, if they made, if they told everybody wear green or something, I'd probably do it, you know, out of respect. And it was cool when he did his, like, goodbye, his farewell tour, that that was the one place where I thought maybe he's going to get booed there. Mm-hmm. But now they gave him a standing ovation there too. And he's definitely going to have a statue outside of the arena, yeah, the same way Shaq does. Already won there, yeah. You know, all that type of stuff. And it just sucks because he played for a very long time, and he's a worldwide figure. You know, like, just the other day I was talking to Ulysses Gomez, and his brother Hercules Gomez was interviewing him in Spanish. And Kobe speaks Spanish. A lot of people don't know that. And he was doing the interview in Spanish.
He spoke Italian. He spoke Spanish too.
He speaks Spanish and Italian. Mm. And so it sucks because the guy gave so much of his life to the game, and he's only been retired a couple years, you know. And it's not like you could say now these are prime time years where he gets to finally just be a dude, and if he wants to eat and do whatever the hell he wants, he can do it.
He was really invested in his daughter's lives. He was at Mandalay Bay a lot because the oldest daughter, the one that passed away, is the second oldest. Mm-hmm. The oldest daughter was a volleyball player. The second one oldest, which was Gianna, the one that died, they call her Gigi, she was the basketball player. That's the one that came a lot to the games with them because they had that little common thread. You know, it was sad because social media can be a great way to share the info. But it was also sad to see the fake rumors that were out there. First, it was him and all of his daughters. Then maybe Rick Fox may have been on the helicopter. I just knew I needed to keep the TVs on mute until the info came. Another thing I didn't like was the hot takes from people. You know, there were other people in the helicopter that passed away. He's like, yeah, we all know that. But there's a lot of crashes every day where people lose their lives. And there's a lot of people that, unfortunately, could care two shits because you don't know the person. Mm-hmm. This is a worldwide person that's very popular. That's why it was a big deal like that. That was one thing too. Of course the guy, you know, he's human. He did some a few unfortunate things years ago that he accounted for in his personal life. I just don't understand why people have to always gravitate towards, hey, look at me, watch me steal the spotlight. I saw a little bit of that.
Yeah,
if you do that, honestly, man, just, you need to grow up. But whatever. I can tell you that a great sportsman died today, man. It's really, really sad, along with his daughter and seven others. And, man, 41 years old, dude, that's really, really young.
That's my age.
That's your age. You know, his birth date is August 23rd, 1978. He's literally one month older than you.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah.
We're talking with one of the waitresses at Mandalay Bay. And so he would always sit in front of the studio, and he would always order the same thing. I can't remember what exactly it is, but we just call it a Kobe. I don't know if you noticed when Zari comes in, he goes, you want a Gozy? You want a Kobe? Mm-hmm. That Kobe's his drink. So we thought we'll all do like a Kobe or something at a Super Bowl.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. May he rest in peace. May his family find the strength to get past this, because he honestly gave them a pretty special life that most of us know nothing about. You know, the privileges of that type of fame and wealth. Goes and folks, I'm not kidding you. That article that I read, Yeah, that's right. I now remember he would stay at the hotel, take a nap, and then he would take a van over to Staples. The reporter basically got to tag along with him. And on that day, Kobe drove. And he said Kobe drove like a bat out of hell. It's a real interesting article. It was about 10 years ago, if I had to guess. And then when they were leaving the hotel, it was right across the street. And the reporter goes, "Why are we waiting for a car? Why don't we just walk over there?" And Kobe looked at him like, "Are you serious?" Like, not cocky, but I think what he was telling him was, if I step outside of this hotel and try and walk over there, it'll probably take me 2 hours. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Unless I just bulldoze through everybody. But that's what Kobe was like. I mean, Kobe Bryant was a mythical Greek god in Los Angeles. You know what I mean? So unless he just basically ignored everyone, it would almost be impossible for him to walk that little half mile. And that's why he would have to, you know, have some service come in and take him that little route, you know, that they were there. But it was really, really interesting. And like I say, I hope his wife and the three kids, including the newborn, the little ones named Capri, there was four daughters, now there's three. Man, that's going to be tough. She lost her husband, the wife. Mm-hmm. I'm sure her best friend. And the daughters lost a sister and a father. And then Vanessa, the wife, also lost a daughter. Dude, that's like ridiculous. And then there's a softball coach or a baseball coach. Him, his wife, and their daughter, their lives are lost. And they also have a sister and a brother. So imagine what that sister, that little girl lost her dad, her mom, and her sister.
Yeah.
And then there's two others along the pilot. I mean, this is a tragedy, dude.
So you know,
a tragedy.
My sensei, Bruce Lemer, was his personal bodyguard for, I think, 20 years. So he was writing some things, like, you know, for all like the dumb negative comments in here, I'll share one because I have two. One, his name is Bruce Lemer. And, you know, he was his bodyguard. And then this is just a guy I went to school with, Nathan Rosenfeld. But he wrote a really cool thing. I'm just going to read it because it's kind of short. But he says, "I'll never forget the day I was two people behind Kobe in line at Togo's in Newport Beach." And all Togo's is a sandwich shop in Newport Beach. And all the people asking him for autographs and photos. All I could do is feel bad for him that he was just there trying to get himself something to eat. He was very gracious, patient, and didn't turn a single person away. He finally got to the order, the tuna fish sandwich he was there to get originally, and the whole time, nothing but a smile on his face. I have no photo, I have no autograph from that day, just the memory and the impression of him that I was left with, and that was enough for me. Rest in peace, Kobe.
Yeah.
That was so cool.
Yeah, it was cool, man. Anyway. All right, we got to wrap up today's show. Thank you, as always, folks, for the support. And tell somebody you love them that you want to, because life is short. You never know when something like this may happen, you know, and you don't want to wait till it's late. And I've been hearing that a lot goes from whether it's celebrities or television or whatever, that it's unfortunate that it takes something like this for you to realize what you had. You
know, yeah, so that's sad.
That's the reminder that we keep getting over and over, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of MMA Junkie Radio. We'll be back midweek with our second show. Don't forget, MMA Junkie, best website on the planet, has all your coverage, all the different storylines, all the fallouts from Bellator 238 and UFC on ESPN Plus 24. In about a week and a half, we also got UFC 247 coming up with Jon Jones against Dominic Reyes. And Valentina Shevchenko against Caitlin Chookagian. So it's going to heat up again very, very soon, folks. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at MMA Junkie George, at The Goes, at MMA Junkie Radio. Holler at us there. We try and get back to everybody. With that, we are out of here for today. Go out there and be a champion.